Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlipp from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, in week one, Lions had a bit of an uneven performance, but did come away with a 26-20 victory in overtime over the Los Angeles Rams on Sunday Night Football. This Sunday at 1 o'clock, also at Ford Field, Lions will be taking on Tampa Bay Buccaneers, also 1-0. They defeated the Washington Commanders 37-20 this past Sunday. And we're going to get into our normal thing. You know, last week we didn't talk about the previous week's game because there was no previous week's game, but we'll be talking about what happened against the Rams. We're going to be looking forward to what's going to happen against the Buccaneers. Anything right off the bat you wanted to talk about? It was, I mentioned earlier, uneven performance. You know, Lions got out to a pretty strong lead, 17-3, let the Rams get totally back into it, had a rally to tie the game going into overtime, and then totally took over and dominated the game, and luckily left us all with that taste in our mouths walking away with the touchdown by David Montgomery, who owned overtime, with really offensive line really owned overtime.
Right. I agree with you. I do think it was a bit of a mixed bag. They had a tough second and third quarters, really one big play in the third quarter, but other than that, they really had to do most of their work in the first, fourth, and then overtime. But I am fascinated by the juxtaposition of perspective from the local audience versus the national audience, because I think the local audience is looking at that game and saying, boy, I'm disappointed. They could have done better. I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. Right. Whereas I feel like the more national perspective is, the Lions beat a really good team that's probably going to be in the playoffs. They found a way to win. They're still really dominant. Confidence in the Lions galore, their power ranking. They're in the top five power rankings in every unit. Most of them, they're like right up there at number two or three. And it's just the national perspective is very, very high on the Lions still. Whereas locally, I think expectations were high. And then when they didn't meet those expectations, there was a little bit of a letting the air out of the balloon effect.
Well, yeah, that and the history. The history always is playing a role. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for the history not to play a role. And, you know, the mindset of the fans, the vast majority of fans. I know not all fans are like that. I think I'm talking to one of them right now. But it's just the fact of this team and the last, 60 years.
Sure. I look, for me, it's at the end of the day, they found a way to win against a team who's probably going to be in the playoffs. And that's where you need to be. Like, you need to be able to not have your best game, to not have your top two pass catching options, have them both underperform, have your quarterback underperform, and then still win. Like, that's what good teams do. And this is a good team. So they did what they were supposed to do, and they send Matthew Stafford away having two terrific games and getting two losses. Basically a summarization of his entire 10-year career here in Detroit, playing great and getting losses. That's unfortunately what what I think the legacy he'll leave behind it for a lot of people.
I would say that Stafford's performance on Sunday was the best game he ever played in that building from beginning to end. Now I know you're like, you could, with the Dallas comeback, the Cleveland comeback, like these great game winning drives aside, a lot of times they needed those great game winning drives because, like, the Lions took the second and third quarters, the first quarter, they usually put themselves in a hole to where Stafford had to rally him back. Whereas Sunday, he played really good from beginning to end. And I think he did the same all the time.
Yeah, I think he did the same thing in the playoff game too. I think the playoff game might have been the one where I think was the best, better. I think he played better in the playoff
game. Maybe that's fair. Yeah.
But I see what you're saying. Like, he's had two great games, like two of the best of his career. And unfortunately for him, he leaves with a loss again. And that's gotta burn him. It's gotta sting almost as much as a question from a local reporter asking about if he enjoys the golf booze or not. Yeah, or the golf chance and the booze, or if he's just over it. I don't know if you heard that question or not.
I heard the question and I can't remember how he I don't know if he really dignified it with a real response
He
or
didn't. He basically just said, "Yeah, I'm over it," essentially. Like he's past it. And then I don't know if you saw the follow-up article. The follow-up article
I did
was
not see the follow-up article.
the follow-up article said he says he's not tired. He says he's not bitter, but he really is. Like
Well, I guess I don't know how bitter. Like it would be interesting after he retires and give it some time, if he ever would, like have an interview,
Oh,
with
I
one
don't
of the
think he's.
local reporters that and kind of really tell
Yeah.
the truth on how he feels. Like
I don't.
he won a
Yeah.
Super Bowl. Like how bitter would he be?
I don't think he's bitter. I think that that question that was asked already had an answer written to it. That's
Sure.
why it got asked. But look, exciting game. Fans were rabid. More false starts because of the fans making noise. They came in ready to go. They showed up 3 hours in advance. The place was, the streets were packed and you could hardly move. I went down to the concourse in between inactives and the game, and it was just like it was just madness. Like they every couple of minutes, people are trying to get a Jared Goff chant going. It was really busy, really buzzy. And the fans were very much ready to go, and they showed out for sure.
We'll come back to this Rams game in a second. Let's start digging into the weekly transactions. First off, Kyle Pecco signed to the 53-man roster. He was elevated for Sunday's game, and now he's just part of the 53-man.
Yeah, this is a technical maneuvering to basically ensure that his contract isn't guaranteed. We talked about this last week. I think other people have talked about it and written about it as well. He is going to come in and he's going to get some run. DJ Reader is expected to return this week, but as we've seen in the past with the Lions, when you're returning a guy from a long-term injury, you typically don't play him a full allotment of snaps. So Pecco's still going to get a lot of run. He played almost half the snaps, like 40 something, 45% of snaps or something like that. So like he played a ton. Reader won't be able to play half a game. So I think it'll probably be like Reader gets half of those nose tackle snaps and Pecco gets the other half.
All right, defensive tackle Chris Smith was signed for the game, released on Monday, and he signed to the practice squad on Wednesday.
Yeah, he's a guy they like. But I think essentially he was elevated because they knew they could cut him and he'd clear waivers, and because he's still on, still within that rookie range where he's not a veteran yet. The salary wasn't guaranteed or anything like that. So it was strictly a strategic move. But I think the fact that he was in the game itself and playing in the game is a good indicator of how much they like him. So an ascending player, but probably belongs on the practice squad for now.
Lastly, a slight surprise. Kicker Greg Joseph assigned to the practice squad on Wednesday. Jake Bates hit both field goals on Sunday. It seems that the and his extra points as well. It seems like the crowd was a little nervous, though. He came in
Oh,
to
yeah.
try to tie the game at the end.
Yeah, I was a little nervous too. Like, that's understandable. I don't think this move to add Joseph to the practice squad was made because of anything Jake Bates did. This was a decision that they made at cutdowns. They wanted to they even Brad Holmes even mentioned it that the plan was to add a veteran kicker to the practice squad at some point. The reason they couldn't add Joseph before Wednesday when they signed him was because you're only allowed to have six veteran spots on the practice squad. And until they signed Pecco, they had used up all six of those veteran slots. So with Pecco being signed to the active roster, They now had just five veterans, one available opening. Now you can bring in the veteran kicker. So that's why he's coming in now and not, you know, earlier than what they were hoping, you know, when they mentioned it, that was part of the plan, you know, a few weeks back.
All right. Next up, the injured list. First up, wide receiver Jameson Williams after his breakout game. Mm-hmm. Ankle injury limited Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, I think this is just precautionary. He talked to the media today at length. Again, usually don't, we've talked about this before. If a player's injured and not going to play, they typically aren't made available to the media. He was, and so I think that's a good sign. He should be okay. He's in my mind, he's expected to play and could potentially have a big role depending on how the Bucs injuries shake out.
Wide receiver Isaiah Williams, abdomen, not on the injury report on Wednesday, limited on Thursday.
Yeah, so that means it either showed up Wednesday like night and then they just limited him on Thursday, or it maybe could have occurred on Thursday and he had to exit practice early. We won't know more on that until Friday, but he really didn't get much playing time on offense anyways, so I don't think he's part of the long, you know, he's part of a long-term project, not necessarily part of a weekly game plan. I also am speculating that the Lions will elevate one of their X receivers because I think the way that they utilized Amon-Ra last game wasn't really conducive to his, you know, his skill sets. And so adding an X will put Amon-Ra in a better situation to have more success. So I'm looking for an X to get elevated, and Isaiah Williams might be like a game day scratch.
Right tackle, Penei Sewell, ankle injury, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday. He was injured, you know, against the Rams. Played the whole game, though. He got hurt early on, right? Wasn't that the first quarter? But he ended up playing the whole way.
Yeah, and he looked okay. And in the locker room, he's walking through the locker room, and he's telling reporters that he's good. So he's probably just precautionary, I would think, at this time. I would have liked to have seen him practice today, but at the same time, they're not going to rush him. Give some other guys some looks, get some reps under the reserves belts. And I'm expecting him to be back at practice on Friday and then ready to go.
Defensive tackle DJ Reader, quad injury, full practice Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, he's coming back. Like, this is the introduction for Lions fans to what DJ Reader is. Hopefully he can be the dominator that we've seen for several years. And once while he may not be fully like ready to go, it's just a matter of time before he is. And the Lions get what they were hoping to when they signed him in free agency.
Edge defender Marcus Davenport, groin injury, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday, did play 63% of the snaps on Sunday. A little bit high.
Yeah. I don't know what to quite make of this one because, you know, the injury history says you should be worried, but at the same time, the Lions are really cautious, especially early in the season, especially with soft tissue stuff. So I don't have a good read on it. I think this is one of those situations where we'll know more on Friday, you know, whether or not he practices. It's possible he practices, gets a questionable label. It's also possible he doesn't practice and then is ruled out. So I don't have a good read on this one either way.
Cornerback Carlton Davis, chest injury, full practice Wednesday, Thursday. He'll be playing against his former team on Sunday.
So do you remember at the end of the game when he almost had the interception?
Yeah.
It looked like he landed on the ball. Like the ball got underneath his chest and it kind of like knocked the wind out of him. And so
better than landing on your keys.
Right. So I think it's related to that. But practicing in full, he's good to go. It's a good big game for him, too.
Safety, Kirby Joseph, hamstring injury, did not practice Wednesday, upgraded to limited on Thursday.
So he went out and did warm-ups on Wednesday and then exited. So it's possible maybe he tweaked something in warm-ups and they just pulled him as a precautionary measure and then have, you know, but the fact that he's practicing already, good sign he should be okay as well.
Lions played 78 defensive snaps
on
Sunday. Brian Branch played all 78 plays. Kirby Joseph only played 75. Brandon Joseph did not get a single rep on deep like. So were they? Did they win? They went one safety for three plays. Was that down near the goal line?
That would
I'm
be my
looking at the
guess.
numbers here. All right.
Yeah, that
It
would
was
be my guess.
stuck out a little bit. All right. Safety. Ify Melifonwu, ankle. Did not practice Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah, he's been out long enough that it's getting to the point where he's probably going to have to reacclimate. Like, he's not just going to get better and be ready to go anymore. He's going to have to get back. He's going to have to work his way back into game shape, and it could take some time. So, like, even if he practiced on Friday, I still wouldn't expect him to be ready to play on Sunday. It's starting to look like this could be a multi-week thing.
Safety Lauren Strickland, thumb injury, full practice Wednesday, Thursday.
That's a good sign. Good sign for him too, especially if Melifonwu can't play. Strickland comes in, gives you more, some a little bit more insurance plus help on special teams. I'm excited to see if he gets on the field. I hope he's not like healthy and then inactive. I'd like to see him run down the field on special teams and do something.
Strickland was an inactive on
Yeah, he was
Wednesday.
hurt. That he was because of that thumb, right?
All right, going back, talk about the Rams. First and foremost, we talked about it a little bit at the top. The overtime drive, where the Lions just said, well, to heck with this. Let's just pound it down their throats. Now, you, being in the stadium, got to see every play of overtime.
Yes.
Whereas we at home, at least in the Detroit area, were had a long commercial break, missed the kickoff, and
Oh.
missed the Khalif Raymond reverse. That
Oh.
was, I didn't know if you knew that or not. So we
I
missed
did
those two
not.
plays. And so the kick, because I was like, oh, I missed a kickoff return. But then, I watched it on Monday morning. And I'm like, oh, okay, just it was a touch
Yeah,
play.
the
It
kick
was a
return,
touch
yeah. Yeah, the kick
play.
return was nothing, and really the Khalif play was to make the pass rushers think twice, right? Doing that quick, and it was a beautiful fake. Like it fooled a lot of people. A lot of the media people thought it was a handoff to right into the traffic there. But he did a little flick to Khalif, and that was pretty slick. And it certainly backed off the pass rush a little bit, made him think, and then it just became bully ball after that. They did one run with Montgomery, and all of a sudden they get a big chunk of yards, and at that point you knew it was, let's just run them over, because they were gassed. They were there. It's a young defensive front. They didn't have the energy. The Lions offensive line was ready to go, and it was, we're just going to take the game over right there, right here. And it was, I mean, you could telegraph it. It was just, you knew it was going to just be run, 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 run. Here we go. And
Now, oh,
go
sorry.
ahead. I was going to say it was
Mostly.
a fun thing to watch.
Yeah, fun thing to watch. Now, during the game, I was personally getting, why aren't they creative at all on offense? Like, they have
Sure.
the one Brock Wright play where everybody went to the right and then he hit Brock Wright coming back left. They didn't have a bunch of crossing routes. They played like pretty much straight up when they went in the passing game, was straight up looking for Williams deep and a lot of bully ball at the line of scrimmage. And a lot of the time it wasn't working. Definitely in the second and third quarters was not working at all. I'm like, why are they doing this? Johnson's a creative guy. Hang on. And then finally in overtime, like you said, it totally pays off
Yeah.
because the Rams were done. And I mean, I was, it was surprising.
It was. I do think there were a lot of crossers underneath that Goff missed. I do think that they pushed Raym they pushed Amon-Ra St. Brown down the field a little bit more than they probably have in the past, and that kind of put him in harder situations. And there were a lot of mirror routes where J-Mo would run the exact same route on one side that Amon-Ra would run on the other. And when they would do that, the safety would shade to Amon-Ra. And so Amon-Ra kind of got more attention. Excuse me. He got more attention. He also got put in situations that he maybe isn't normally thriving in. And I do think that with him not being in the slot, Goff just wasn't looking there as often. And he was trying to look downfield more, push the ball. And it was just a combination of things that didn't quite work, which is why I think they'll try and get a wide receiver X up this week so that they can get Amon-Ra back into some of those spots where he, dominated people in the past. So, And again, it's nothing against Khalif or Amon-Ra or even, you know, Ben Johnson or even Goff. Like, it's a combination of like a few of several different things that just didn't come together to make it a conducive passing environment. It was very different than what we've seen in the past. And I think that's one of the reasons they were stagnant. They had a couple three and outs because they put themselves in third and long and then couldn't convert. And a lot of those little mistakes, they all kind of added up to big lulls in offensive production.
All right, switch it over to the there's not much else to say about the offense because it was all running. And well, I don't know, you want to go on about Jameis and Williams, the great double? I mean, everybody saw that. Everybody thought it was incredible. You know, like, I don't know what else we could say about that. And we all know from last year, like, it's the stuff he could be capable of. And it was great to see him not to only get the ball twice. You know, they targeted him 9 times, right? He had 5 receptions, over 120 yards. Like, he's not going to do it every week. I mean, if he does do it every week, the Lions are in great shape. But he's not going to do it every week. But if they could get 7 of those games out of him, you know, the Lions are still in great shape. So he's coming to life.
Yeah, I do think 9 targets is a bit high, but I do think he got 9 targets because
of the St. Brown and Laporta situation.
Exactly. So could he get 6 targets and 4 catches? Absolutely. Could he still put up 100 yards? Sure, because he's a game breaker. But you know, like this week, who knows what they're going to what the game plan is going to be. We're going to kind of dive into that in a bit, but they've passed historically on the Bucs in the past. And so it could be another week for JMO to have a handful, 5, 6 catches and you know, a good size yardage, even if Amon-Ra comes back and starts making noise as well.
And back to the backfield, you know, Montgomery was great in overtime, you know, getting off big chunks of yards. Gibbs had two great plays too. He had the reception off to the right side, and then he had the one time they ran to the left, it was Gibbs. And you know, those were two fine plays, giving Montgomery the break. 18 touches for both of them, 17 carries, 1 reception for Montgomery, 14 carries, 4 receptions for Gibbs. I think we'd all feel pretty good if that's how it went going forward, if that's what we saw every week.
Yeah, and running backs coach Scotty Montgomery said that wasn't intentional. They were just kind of going with the hot hand, but it just happened to work out that they got an even split. They mixed up how they used them. Sometimes they would use one guy for a whole drive and then another guy for a whole drive. Sometimes they would do a couple snaps for one guy, then shift over a couple snaps for the other guy, which is tends to be my preference, but they had a variety of different usages and, yeah, I think they're going to try and stick to even as much as they can, just maybe not even intentionally, but subconsciously. It just makes sense to try and give them both a lot of opportunities.
163 yards on the ground. Nothing more spectacular than the Jared Goff 7-yard run, which seems to energize everybody from the team to the announcers to all the fans in the crowd. Offensive linemen, all 5 of them played all however many, 71 snaps, whatever it was. Only played 6 offensive linemen twice, and they really pointed, and you know, Tirico had it pointed out, and Dan Skipper was out on the field. They didn't use on Sunday, but maybe something they'll use next Sunday or going forward a bit more.
The other thing that they did on offense that they didn't really utilize on Sunday, but they will, I guarantee they'll use it more moving forward, is Vaki. They gave him some snaps at fullback. So a couple of times they took him out and then motioned him into like a fullback type role. That I'm all about that. I'm all about utilizing him out of the fullback role, because defenses don't pay attention to the fullback. And when you have a Vaki who has such tremendous hands, you can get him out there and throw him a ball, and it's just got big play written all over it. He's also big enough that he's not scared to go hit some linebackers. You know what I mean? And so you can actually use him like a fullback, even though he's very much a running back. He's just, his skill set is so unique as a big body guy that I'm looking forward to see where that goes, because I think it has a lot of potential.
All right, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. Defensive line, only came away with two sacks. Team only came away with two sacks on the night, but they were delivering loads of pressure, right? As we talked about last week, the Rams were without both starting tackles. And on top of it, they lost a third one in the game. So yeah. Lions were able to apply a lot of pressure.
27 pressures was their team total. Aiden Hutchinson accounted for 11. And I think his pass rush win rate was 47.7 or something like that, which means on half of his sacks, he was pressuring the quarterback. It's or half of his pass rushing snaps. He was at least winning the initial play. Stafford was just so quick with the ball. Like there was nothing they could have done.
The Rams losing another offensive tackle mm-hmm. was the best thing that could have happened to them in a way.
Honestly. Yes.
No, because it forced 100%. It forced McVay and the gang to like abandon their game plan. And mm-hmm. it's like, it's all gotta be these short crossing routes. We can't do anything else except for throw short crossing routes. And it ate the Lions alive on you know, defensively. You know, Stafford threw for over 300 yards. They almost won the game because of it. Mm-hmm. You know, like it almost won them the game by having such, you know, in such a predicament on the mm-hmm. on the edges of their offensive line. AJR Curie is out there, the Michigan Stater. And right. you know, he's 1,000 times the football player I could ever be, but he was terrible in college. You know, and he's out there trying to block Hutchinson and trying to, you know, like it's yeah, insane. Now
it was tough.
Late in the game, about 2:30 left to play. So Hutchinson's playing right in the whole game. And he's, you know, destroying our Curie. There'd be a couple of plays where he blocks them, and I'm like, it's crazy. Like, how did that happen? But then they move him to the right side, to the left side with 2:30. Mm. I didn't understand that. I didn't get why they did that. And it didn't cost them in the end. And you know, mm. and things worked out fine. But I thought that was rather odd. And I don't know if you have a breakdown, and I probably should have asked you this beforehand, mm. but like it seemed like he was on the right most of the night, but then all of a sudden, kind of when they needed it most, they moved him over to the left, and I don't know why they did that.
Basically, if they stuck to their patterns, he plays on the left when they go into a nickel. He stays on the right when they're in their base, and they were in their base, I think over half the time. They were only in nickel, like 45% of the time or something like that. And so he spent a ton of time on the right side. Looking up the numbers here, he was on the right side 47 snaps. He was on the left side 23 snaps. And I think that lines up pretty close, yep. pretty close to a reflection of what base they were in, or whether they were in base or whether they were in their sub package. And at the end of the game, when they moved him to the other side, it was simply because I think they went to their sub package, and that's typically where he plays. I agree with you. I would have just left him and just been like, cool, just keep trying to wreck that guy. But, but that's, they, you know, they stick to what they know, and they don't want to shake things up too much in the middle of a game. So that's what I think that would be my assumption. Now, I don't know that for definitively, but that's what makes the most sense to me.
Linebackers played rather well. Yeah. Jack Campbell's gotten better. You could tell that. That's good. Derek mm-hmm. Barnes, he was out there for a lot of snaps. He's, you know, they used him in all different ways. But Alex Anzalone, like when he's got those linebackers healthy, he's great.
Yeah,
he's really become good. Like he's really good. Yeah. And this goes back to my theory from the San Francisco game. Once they lost Barnes, he was forced into doing too much. He's got them all back. He can play within himself. He's making plays mm-hmm. all over the place.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see a different switch in this game, in the Bucs game, compared to what we saw against the Rams in Week 1. Because what we saw against the Rams was very similar to what they showed against the 49ers last year, which was Barnes at the mic a lot, and then Jack supplementing the mic, and then Barnes would kind of shift down to the Sam every once in a while. I'm expecting more Sam looks against the Bucs. That means more Derek Barnes in that Sam role. Probably means more Jack Campbell at the mic, but probably going to see a lot of three linebacker sets. We saw Malcolm out there for a handful of snaps. We saw Jalen Reeves-Maybin get a few snaps in coverage situations late in the game. They definitely leaned on all five of their guys at the linebacker position for sure.
All right, secondary. Secondary played pretty well. Well, I shouldn't even say pretty well. They were kind of, when they run those crossing routes, they're kind of held up by the circumstances. But they had some issues tackling.
Yeah, that was really the breakdown. I thought they were playing well until the you started having some errors with the tackling. Guys ran into each other a couple of times, over pursuits a couple of times, letting guys slip out of your grasp a couple of times. Like there was just and when you have a couple times of each of those things, it adds up and it's correctable. And you can put a lot of the blame on it being early in the season because tackling is usually a little porous early in the season. So you're hoping that's an area that can improve, especially because some of the guys, like a guy like Brian Branch, was one of the guys that missed a couple of tackles. And Branch is usually one of the most sure tacklers on the team. In my opinion, some of his missed tackles were about angles. Like he's still learning the angles of playing safety. But again, that's correctable, and that's something he should be able to learn and fix. So I thought Carlton Davis's tackling was good. Tarion had some ups and downs in the tackling department. He also had some ups and downs in the coverage department. But again, there was nothing out there that I looked at and said, oh boy, this is a problem that I don't have a solution for. And that's something you t I you know I've said almost every year in the past, but this was a year. This was one of the first times that I've looked and said, man, all these mistakes are fixable mistakes just either by repetition or concentration, or just being efficient with what you're supposed to do. So I'm encouraged by secondary, even though they did have some very clear mistakes.
Surprising by the breakdown in tackling because they are a very physical team in practice. Like that's what they pride themselves on, and those teams are usually the better tackling teams. That's something to keep the our eyes on. All right, let's start talking about the Buccaneers. Enough of that season opening win. Lions opened up 6.5 point favorites. It's now pushed to 7.5. They're quickly becoming a public team, so I'm guessing any game the Lions are going to be favored, they're going to really be pushing the line in their favor. Game, as I mentioned before, Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern time on Fox. Kevin Kugler, Daryl Johnston, and Laura Oakman down on the field. Referee is Clay Martin, his seventh season as a referee. Last year, he averaged 10.76 flags per game, which is a little bit under the league average.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised by the line, to be honest, because I thought the Bucs looked good in their opening game. But as I started breaking down, the Bucs and looking at their weaknesses, where they match up, some of the advantages the Lions have, I can kind of understand it a little bit more. I still think 7.5 is a lot.
It's a lot for this team. The Lions are good, but they don't. I mean, 7.5, 8 point win is not a blowout. And in fact, that was the score of last year's playoff game was 31-23, right? So an 8 point game. So, it could repeat itself, sure. But the Lions aren't a team that, like, well, let me think about that. They're not a team that they win close games, like, for the most part. They're not. Lions aren't winning by two touchdowns a ton. So, 7.5 does seem like quite a few points.
Yeah, I'm, and again, I'm trying to really like put the obvious nail in it, and injuries are certainly something that's going to come into play, but yeah, it's really hard. Other than maybe like you said, it's the national audience buying in and then putting their money on the Lions, even when it's a big number like that.
All right. So, new offensive coordinator Liam Cohen, the old offensive coordinator Dave Canales left and became the head coach of the Carolina Panthers. So they looked good offensively. last week, 37 points. So there was some thoughts like, oh, maybe, you know, like the, he was the Baker Mayfield whisperer and maybe things won't work out. So far, so good. Cohen comes over for the Rams. Surprise, surprise, people grabbing folks from the Rams. Key additions and free agent. Did you want to talk about Cohen at all?
Let's talk about Cohen just a little bit. So he got his NFL break with the Rams back in like 2018. He got his break. He was a wide receivers assistant coach, quarterback assistant coach, ends up going to Kentucky to be their offensive coordinator. He's there for one season, and then the Rams bring him back to be their offensive coordinator in 2022. Now, that's the year that Matthew Stafford got hurt. And that's the year that they went 5-12. That's also the year that they signed Baker Mayfield to finish off the season. So Cohen was the offensive coordinator of that group at that time. He then doesn't make it through the season, or I'm sorry, after the season, he gets let go. He goes back to Kentucky for a year. Then he comes back and they're looking to replace Canales, but Canales is, of course, now Canales is a McVay disciple himself. So Bucks are looking for a OC that can keep the Canales's kind of system in place, but maybe add his own wrinkles and nuances into it just to see how, you know, he can improve it. So it was a fit that made a lot of sense. Now he's got more McVay in him than he does Canales, a lot of the base concepts are going to be the same, right? Like you're going to see things like play actions, you're going to see things like motion, you're going to see 11 out of 11 personnel, tight bunches, all those things that you kind of saw last week from the Rams, you're going to see similar things with the Bucks, just a different type of like skill player, right? Instead of those short, quicker receivers like the Rams have, you now have these bigger body, more traditional type wide receivers. Canales didn't run as much motion, but he ran about 40% of the time. He'd run a little pre-snap motion. That's what Canales did. Cohen though runs over 60% of his plays last week were all in pre-snap motion. It's real close to McVay, who's also his pre-snap motions in the 60s as well. So it's going to be more reminiscent. He's also committed to the run game. One of the things that was one of my keys to victory last time against Canales was if you shut the run down, he will walk away from it and he will go one dimensional and just leave it up to Baker. And that's one of the ways you can kind of like subdue him. With Cohen, it's not like that as much. He's more committed to the run. He's willing to, you know, play the long game with the run. Hard part with them is that the run hasn't been very successful. Historically they've kind of struggled with the run. And then even last week they had a couple of big plays, but those were more sprung out because of Baker. Around a third of the time, their runs were not getting anything. They were getting no gains or losses, about a third of their runs in week one. Whereas, the big plays that they had were mostly like Baker being allowed to check into run plays when he saw a defense that he liked, they wanted to take advantage of. So Cohen kind of lets Baker have a little bit more freedom as well. So I think you're going to see more Rams offense than Bucks offense from last year. At the same time, I think there's things about Cohen's offense that does make this offense a little bit more dangerous. And I thought it looked very well against the Commanders. Putting up, you know, 37 points is not too shabby. So all that being said, this is the first time this will be the second game he's called plays as an offensive coordinator in the NFL. Okay, when he was an OC for the Rams, McVay still called the plays. Now he's been an OC at Kentucky for 2 years, but it's a whole different ball game calling plays in college than it is versus the pros. So again, did well last week. Can he repeat that and do well against a tougher Lions team? We'll have to find out, because I think he's going to get tested and he's going to have some obstacles to overcome.
All right, talk about the additions. They look quite a bit different than they did last season. Free agency additions. Left guard Ben Bredesen, former Michigan man. Cornerback, I guess you're always a Michigan man. I'm sorry. Cornerback
No, you can be
Tavarry
former.
Thomas. Cornerback Bryce Hall and free safety Jordan Whitehead. At the same time, major losses include center Ryan Jensen, who retired, Ed Shaq Barrett, who retired, linebacker Devin White, safety Ryan Neal. So a lot of the three of those guys, and maybe Neal was four, like vital cogs in the Super Bowl team from a few years ago.
Yes.
Did you want to comment on any of the free agent pickups?
No, I think they were
we'll
all.
We'll get to that when we go position by position.
Yeah, I think they were all just direct. We have to replace guys, and I think they did okay with the guys that they replaced them with.
Then in the NFL draft in the first round, they selected Graham Barton from Duke, who was I don't know. We talked about him a bit.
Yeah,
potentially becoming a Lion.
Very
Second.
Athletic. I was just sorry. Very
Yeah,
athletic tackle who converted into center that we thought would have fit well in Detroit.
Round two linebacker Chris. What is that? Braswell from Alabama. How do I forget these names? Right, you know, I've watched him for the last how many years? All right, round three cornerback Tyke Smith from Georgia. Also in round three, wide receiver Jalen McMillan from Washington. One of those top notch wide receivers they had there. Round four running back Bucky Irving from Oregon. Round six guard Elijah Klein from UTEP. And round seven tight end David Culp from Washington. So another Washington guy who played a lot in that finalist team. So there's their draft.
Yeah, and the first five guys all have contributing roles. So they're getting good use out of this draft class. Barton is their starting center. Braswell is part of their edge rotation. Smith, we're going to talk about how he's going to get elevated. McMillan is their starting slot. Like, and Irvin was one of the guys who had big breakout runs. So yeah, they're doing well with utilizing their draft class.
All right, so injuries that the Buccaneers have or absences coming into this week. Right tackle Luke Gedecky, he's from Central Michigan, right? Yeah.
Yep.
He's got a concussion. He was limited on Wednesday, downgraded to no practice Thursday.
Yeah, that's a bad sign. To go from limited to downgraded means you kind of have to start the protocol process over. So he's very much in danger of missing this game. And that could be a potentially big loss because I thought he played well against Hutchinson in the two matchups they had. But if you move on from him, you got to go to a veteran, but veteran backup, but who, you know, the talent level isn't there.
Next up, defensive lineman Kalijah Kansey, calf injury, missed all week one, still out. First round pick from last year.
Yeah, and he got injured in Friday's practice, missed the game, and then hasn't been able to practice since. So the Bucs reporters are really starting to look at him as potentially being out as well, which could be a problem for their defense because he's a talented player.
Defensive lineman Logan Hall with a foot injury also missed week one, but he's practicing this week. He's expected to return on Sunday.
Yeah, they'll need him. He's a starter. Without him, without Hall or Kiancey in the lineup, they had to use basically two nose tackles on the interior, and both nose tackles, they weren't getting a lot of pass rush out of them. So they're hoping to get Hall back so that they can get a little bit more athleticism on the inside.
Cornerback Zion McCallum, concussion, going through the protocol. He likely will play Sunday.
Yeah, and they'll need him because he's one of their starters now. He's the guy who took over as a starter for Carlton Davis, and as we're going to find out here in a second, their depth is really a potential problem.
Cornerback Bryce Hall, one of the free agent pickups, ankle fibula, likely out for the season.
Yeah, so that's a big blow because he was kind of like their corner three. And if McCollum wasn't going to play, it was probably going to be Hall, but now Hall's going to end up being probably shelved.
Cornerback Josh Hayes, ankle injury, not practicing, currently in a walking boot.
Yeah. And so he's corner four. And so now corner four is probably not going to play either. So now you really need McCollum. They really need McCollum to come back because if they don't have McCollum, Hall's probably not going to play. Hayes is probably not going to play. They'd be going to corner five to try and get a start. So McCollum coming back is a big deal for them.
Safety, Antoine Winfield Jr., foot injury, expected to miss a few weeks.
And that's going to have a fallout as well, because now with him missing the game, Ian Christensen is going to have to, I'm sorry, Christensen Eisen is going to have to move from his nickel starting spot to the free safety starting spot. When he moves to free safety, that's when Tyke Smith ends up getting elevated into the starting nickel role. But they have no backup nickel. They have no backup outside corners outside of one UDFA and one corner that they just signed this week. So outside of their starters, they don't really have really much corner depth at all. And what they do, it's very inexperienced. So health is going to be an important issue for the Bucs secondary.
All right. Let's start digging into the offense and defense. Lead it off with the offense. That Liam Cohen's group, quarterback Baker Mayfield, his backups Kyle Trask. We all know about Mayfield. So this is the second week in a row the Lions will be facing off with the first overall pick in an NFL draft, for whatever that's worth.
So we all know Baker, right? Like, we know what he is. We know what he's capable of when he's in the right system. He's a talented player. When he's not in the right system, he looks like an average Joe. But I feel like he's in the right system, right? Like he's done well. He started learning the Bucs system a couple years. Sorry, started learning Cohen's system a couple years ago, or at least McVay's system, and he's been sprinkled with it with a couple of descendants since then. He's really started to learn, and he's been producing. And he had a really nice back half of last season. He's carried it over into the playoffs. Looked good. In week one, he was decisive, accurate, made good throws. And so I think Baker is a guy who is someone that, you know, could be a potential problem. Now, he's not Matt Stafford, right? Like, he's not going to be able to just take a game over himself. It's not going to be a complete game from start to finish. He's not going to get the ball out as long, because Baker is, again, we've talked about this in the past, Baker's a gunslinger. And so Baker thinks he can make the throws. He thinks he can, if he holds onto the ball and uses his legs to get some, to buy some time, that he can find a hole down the field, and he has the accuracy to hit it. So the issue will just be, you know, condensing the pocket, and then, you know, not letting him escape and not letting him extend, but also like pressuring him to a point where he either has to throw or try and run. And then you got to have an answer for that if he tries to run. So, you know, it's going to be the same guy that they saw you know, in the playoffs. And I got a feeling it's going to be more like the guy they saw in the playoffs as opposed to the guy they saw during the regular season, who had one of his worst games as a pro. So I'm expecting good Baker Mayfield to show up in this one.
Baker's numbers from last Sunday, 24 of 30, so 80% passing, 289 yards, 4 TDs, 0 picks. Numbers against the Lions in the divisional playoffs last year, 26 of 41, 349 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Derek Barnes got in the way of his last ball that he threw in that game to seal it for the Lions send to the NFC Championship game. All right. Running backs. Starting back is Rashad White. We mentioned the rookie, Bucky Irving, is his backup. Number 3 running back, Sean Tucker. Irving outrushed White in the first game, but it was only on 9 carries. White is the number 1 back, 14 carries. I think he had 7 receptions, so he gets the bulk of the work, but I'm sure they're going to try to use Irving a lot as well.
Yeah, it's like a 70-30 split. He was on the positive end of a couple of checks from Baker, which put him in situations where he had a couple explosive plays and drew some attention from the national audience because of it. He is a good back, but he's not a back that you're going to get explosive plays from on a weekly basis, in my opinion. And I think Rashad White is just a guy. I think he's an average back in the NFL. Not terrible, not great. He's just going to be a guy who, you know, produces at an average rate and maybe even under, because I think the Bucs run game has typically been under, but I'm not too worried about the individual talent as much as I am the Cohen's commitment to the run and then Baker's ability to check into a good running situation. So, still something the Lions are going to focus on heavily. That's what they do. And so I expect the same type of attention that we saw last year in the playoffs, where they're going to run more base, they're going to use more Sam, and they're going to focus on trying to stop that run first.
Buccaneers ran the ball 30 times on Sunday compared to, geez, it was in the teens. It was only 15 against the Lions back in the playoffs. Lions held the Buccaneers to 80 some yards rushing in the playoffs. They rushed for 100 and some change on Sunday. All right, wide receiver group. This is where the Buccaneers have the biggest advantage over the Lions, if not only because they have a pretty big advantage over almost any team in the NFL. They have solid receivers. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Jaylen McMillan. Those are the three. McMillan's the new slot receiver, the rookie. Backing him up, Trey Palmer and Cameron Johnson.
So you're talking about between 70 and 85% snaps for the three starters, and then the Palmer and Johnson are going to get between like 20 and 30% of their snaps. So they're going to play all five. But obviously they do lean on their studs, Evans and Godwin. Evans is getting old, but Evans still looks good. Like he's still producing 1,000-yard seasons. He's still caught two touchdowns. All three starters caught touchdowns in this in week one. And so what are you going to say about Evans?
It's getting to that point where they start. Is Mike Evans a Hall of Famer? Is that they're starting to that conversation's getting started? And somebody the other day said he's the greatest player in Buccaneers history, and I don't,
That's a
that's
little.
probably going a little far at this point, but he's probably on the Mount Rushmore of one of the top four Buccaneers of all time, because it's Warren Sapp, Derrick Brooks, John Lynch, right, and him. I would guess those would be the top four. You can't count Brady. He was only there for a couple of years, and he was, in his best in New England. But I don't know, great player. He had a couple of touchdowns in week one. He had a monster game against the Lions in the playoffs. This is a great receiving core, is Carlton Davis going to have the assignment against Mike Evans? Does he know something about these guys? Is he giving, the Lions all the information in meetings? That usually doesn't mean much over
Oh,
the years.
he 100% is giving away all the goods on them. Aaron Glenn talked to the media today and said it was the greatest breakdown he's ever seen from a defensive back on a set of wide receivers in his career, like as a player and a coach. He said he's never seen a corner break down receivers the way that Davis did of Evans and Godwin. So the Lions have the book on what those two guys are all about, what they like to do, what are the advantages. And I don't think Carlton's necessarily going to square off against one of them. I think they're going to continue to play sides like they did last week. And they're not going to try and they don't necessarily need to match up. If they do, I don't know. I think Mike Evans might end up on Davis personally, even though I think historically he's had more snaps against Godwin when he was in Tampa Bay. But I think the Lions are just going to kind of play it up and say, hey, now our whole secondary knows what these guys are about. And Davis gave us, the whole book on them. And while you can argue, hey, these guys know what Davis's weaknesses are, they don't know what Therion's are, like other than watching film on week one. They don't know what, Rakestraw can do. They don't know what branch it's like for branch at safety. Like, there's a learning curve that they're going to have to figure out, trying to figure out the Lions' entire secondary with all the new faces. But the Lions' whole secondary definitely has the book on these two receivers. Now, getting it done against them is not going to be an easy task. But they've done well in the past. They've held Godwin in check both time in both games. And Evans was in check the first game, but not the second one he broke out. But I think this is a talented group, and so if they have a good game plan, I do think that they will, they'll be looking to try and bounce back and show that they got the chops. At the same time, I think Mike Evans is just he's just so hard to stop, and he's going to be a problem for the Lions secondary. I think he's a matchup problem for the Lions, and I'm not sure if they completely have an answer for him. It's possible they have the talent. I think they're still very young in their gelling process, and I think Mike's going to be a real big test for them.
All right, tight end group, K. Dotton, Payne Durham, Co. Kieft, Devin Culp. That group combined had one catch for 5 yards on Sunday.
Yeah, it's an underwhelming group, but it's good players. Like, Otten's a good player. Durham's a good player. Like, I think both those tight ends are good tight ends. It's just they don't get utilized a lot. Last year with Canales, he utilized a lot of two wide receiver, two tight end, one running back sets. That's not how Cohen operates. Cohen operates with more 11 personnel, with three wide receivers on the field, one tight end, one running back. So the tight end, the dual tight end usage gets scaled back tremendously, and a lot more three wide receiver sets. So the Lions will, you know, they'll need to rely on their nickel just like they did last week. But I do still expect them to use a lot of base just like they did last week as well.
All right. Tampa's offensive line from left to right: Tristan Wirfs, Ben Bredesen, Graham Barton, Cody Mauch, Luke Gedecky, if he plays, he's in the concussion protocol. Justin Skule would be the guy who would play in his place if he does not perform if he doesn't pass the protocol. Mm-hmm. Wirfs is excellent. Bredesen's pretty good. Graham Barton's a rookie. You know, it's a decent enough offensive line.
Yeah, it's a good offensive line. Look, outside of Trent Williams. So if Trent Williams is retired, I mean, look, Penei Sewell is the best offensive lineman in the NFL. Tristan Wirfs might be the second best offensive lineman in the NFL. He's that talented. Like he is a big problem if they have Aiden on that side. Like, I would much rather see them play Aiden on the right tackle. Even if Gedecky plays, I still would rather have him on that side than not. Wirfs is fantastic. You're going to have, he's a guy that he's going to, everything that you want to say about Penei, you can probably put a lot of those same accolades on Wirfs. He's agile. He's big. He's got good movement. He's got good pass pro. He's got good run blocking. He doesn't have the menacing demeanor that Penei has, but he's got all the talent. I don't know. Bredesen is okay to me. He's an average player. I think he's serviceable on the interior. I think Grant Barton's going to be really good, but he's played one game at center. You know what I mean? Like, he's after playing a couple. Now, okay, he played center at Duke as a freshman and then switched to tackle. And then now they're switching him back to center because I think, you know, it's one of the things we talked about with him in the draft. It kind of makes sense. He's athletic, mobile, and I think he'll be good eventually. He's just not great right now. Like, I think eventually he'll get there. Mauch is a guy I like, and the guy that, you know, but he's only a year into the system, and he has been just average right so far. Again, I think the future is bright for him. I just don't know if he's there yet. Gedecky is probably the second best offensive lineman that they have outside of Wirfs. But if he doesn't play, you're going to school who is, or is it school or Schoolie? I'm not even sure. Yeah. He's a 50 game starter. He's a 50 game starter, or I'm sorry, 50 game player. He's only started 12 games, has not started a game since 2020, and has never started at right tackle. His starts either come at left tackle or guard. And so drafted by San Francisco back in the day, been with the Bucs last 2 years, but he's a veteran with experience, and he's a backup. And so you're going to get what you expect out of a veteran. And, you know, it's Dan Skipper-esque is what you're getting essentially out of him. So Robert Hainsley would be their OT3 if Schoolie needs to play. So we'll see how that kind of shakes out for them. I think, again, the couple of guys that they are losing to injury are really at bad spots for what the Lions do. So Lions may be in a good spot for, a couple of advantages here.
All right. Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. Todd Bowles is defense. Head coach. This is also his baby. This is the defense. Base 3-4. Yes, I'm sure.
Yeah, but
Eric
it
will break
probably,
that loud a little deeper.
yeah, it looks like a 3-4, but it's mostly a 2-4-5. So you see, mostly have two down linemen, two pass rushing linebackers, two off the ball linebackers, kind of similar to what we had talked about with the Rams last week.
Right, but last week, last Sunday, they opened up. The starters were Greg Gaines, Vita Vey, William Golston, the ageless wonder from Michigan State.
Yep.
And you mentioned that they played two nose tackles to start, which would be Vey and
And
Greg
Gaines.
Gaines. They're
Yep.
hoping to get Logan Hall back on Sunday, and then they'll have Ben Steele as the fifth guy.
Okay, if you look at the breakdown, Vita Vey and Gaines played about 60% of their snaps. Golson played 30%, and then Steele only played like 10%. So they didn't even keep two of those guys on the field at all times. Like they were leaning heavy on the athletes around them. So Hall will give them a little bit more stability and allow them to keep more big bodies up front. But they basically went to nose tackles because they needed bulk, but it's not really conducive against the Lions. Like you're not, if you've got two nose tackles out there, they're going to throw on you. If you have one nose tackle out there and a couple extra edge guys, well, they're probably going to run on you. And the Lions are one are a team that has the balance that they can do both. So getting Hall back will help force the Lions to be more accountable, and they won't be able to, the Bucks won't be tipping their hat on their defensive approach because they'll be able to have more talented guys at the front positions on their defensive line. Vey is terrific. I think he's your best down lineman, especially with Kancey out, and the rest of the guys are all just guys. I think Hall is an average player, but he's better than the other guys. He's better than the backups that they needed to rely on last week. I know William Golston is ageless, but he's also aging. And so
I don't, and
he's
he was never, I don't, he was a good player at one time. Like, he's an interesting guy. He's just meant to play football, it seems.
Yeah,
He's
certainly.
not the
And
greatest player ever, but.
even Greg Gaines was like a stout nose tackle, like for a while,
Right.
but he's just, he's just a guy, in my opinion. Like none of these guys are dominators. Vey is a dominator because he can be a dominator because of his power, and Kancey can be a dominator because of his speed. But outside of those two, the other guys are just kind of guys, in my opinion. So they're going to utilize most of the time two of these guys on the field at the same time. That's typically what they're going to try and do. Two of them.
All right. Linebacker group. The starters last week, KJ Britt, Lavonte David, Joe Tryon, Soyinka, Yaya Diaby, Anthony Nelson, Servo-Sea Dennis, the aforementioned rookie Chris Braswell, JJ Russell, Jose Ramirez. That's a big group of line and Marquise Watts, big group of linebackers. They, of course, aren't going to play them all, and I'm guessing a couple of inactives come out of that group. But the headliners be Britt, David, Tryon, Soyinka.
So if we stick with the edge guys, that's
Yeah, we
Yaya
probably should have broke
Diaby.
it down like that.
That's okay. Yaya Diaby and Tryon Shavinka, those are your starters. But last week they each played about half the snaps. And then Braswell played about half the snaps, and Anthony Nelson played about half the snaps, with slight edges going to Diaby and Tryon Shabanka. Those are also the guys that were more productive. Tryon and Diaby, those are the guys who had more. They have more pat. They had more pressures. I think Tryon is one of the guys with the who made a sack. Tryon's a guy who they'll also drop into coverage sometimes, and so I expect to see a lot of more production out of those two guys when they're on the field, but they will They like to rotate. Like, that's why Braswell saw over 40% snaps. That's why Anthony Nelson saw almost 50% of snaps. Like, they like to rotate their edge guys to keep them fresh, but the starters are basically Diaby and Tryon. The issue is they're not really getting home, right? And so for us, watching last week, the Lions weren't getting home a lot because Stafford was getting the ball out quick. That wasn't necessarily the case with Washington. With Washington, it was more like they had a mobile quarterback, and so they were trying to play more contained than not than get home. And even then, they kind of struggled. They gave up a bunch of yards to Daniels, but I expect them to try and like get home a little bit more. They're not going to really have to worry about containing Goff. The problem is the Lions, they gave up 10 pressures last week, and that's a high number for them. So Lions don't give up a lot of pressure, and I expect them to try and keep that number down. So Diaby's a guy who can get pressure, but doesn't get home. Tryon will get home, but they'll drop him into coverage, and then they'll blitz one of their middle linebackers. I don't know if you recall when we talked about this in the playoffs. Like, they will try and disguise their blitzes because Todd Bowles likes to blitz from all over the place. And one of the things that they will do is they'll put Tryon in an edge role, Tryon in an edge role, and then they'll drop him, and then they'll blitz like Lavonte David or Sabakia Dennis. They'll blitz him. Like, he got a sack last week, I think, too. So it's a creative way to send blitzes from different angles in disguise, and they kind of have the athletes that can do it now. Braswell can kind of drop as well if they need him to. So they get some options with their linebackers, but really, they outside of the blitz, if you're just talking like straight up, can they beat them? They're leaning a lot on those edge guys. Lavonte David's one of the better middle linebackers in coverage. He's one of the best coverage linebackers in the game. In the first meeting against the Lions, he did really well shutting down Sam Laporta. In the playoffs, he struggled against Sam Laporta. And I think that was more conducive to the type of coverage that they have against tight ends. Down the stretch, they were really giving up a lot of yardage because even though Lavonte David is good, they utilize him in a lot of different ways. They're not just constantly putting him in coverage roles against a tight end. Lions took advantage, and I believe Laporta had like 9 targets or 9 catches or something like that in the playoff game. So potential Sam Laporta bounce back game here. And yeah, KJ Britt's been, I think he was ill this week, but he'll probably be okay. Have decent off the ball guys, but again, Lavonte David is really the stud. The edge rushers are all kind of average to maybe slightly above average, and so but the Lions are going to have to be on point to adjust to the different blitz schemes coming from Bowles.
48 sacks last year for the Buccaneers. 2 last week against the Commanders, 2 against the Lions in the playoff game, in the divisional round. All right. Secondary group. There's a lot going on here. Let me see if I can nail this down. Corners. Jamel Dean, Zion McCollum, if he clears protocol,
Right.
Tyke Smith as the nickel.
Correct.
Tavaire Thomas as the backup nickel, and then the reserve corners would be Tyreek Funderburk and Graham Barton. Oh, here we go. What did
No,
I miss?
I didn't have Graham. Graham, well, you don't mean Graham Barton. Hold on. That's the center.
Oh, that is the same.
Did they
Wait.
list him there? Okay,
They did
sorry.
list them there. I should have looked this. I should have double checked this.
I think they probably are. That's a placeholder for Keenan Isaac, who's the guy they just signed, I would
Okay.
assume.
Why did they do that?
It's a mistake on that depth chart there. It's all right. Yes, I'm with you. I did not know that they would use Tavaire Thomas as the backup
That's what they
nickel.
have him listed as.
It's fine by me. He is their backup free safety as well, so I kind of had him in my head there. it would make sense because they do a lot of three safety sets that he would also be the backup in the slot. That's fine. Makes sense to me. But yes, it outside of McCollum and Dean, they are leaning on Funderburk, who's a UDFA, or Keenan Isaac, who they just signed off the. Now, Isaac was with the team during training camp, so he's not unfamiliar with the scheme. That's why they brought him back. But he was also cut, and no one sniffed him, right, at all. Even the Bucks didn't sniff him on the practice for the practice squad. So it should, it kind of, I think that kind of says a lot. So it's they don't have a lot of room for error. If their starters can play every snap, they could be okay. If they
That's what
need to,
usually it often
yeah.
happens in these games when a team seems totally short at a position like the Rams at offensive tackle, like even though that still didn't really work out for them, but like here, like the Buccaneers secondary is a mess,
Yeah.
but it's going to hold up for some reason on Sunday, you know, some bizarre reason they're going to play well. We're going to be tipping passes and we're doing all this crazy stuff, and we're just going to be sitting there like, why? Like they should have eaten this group alive.
Well, I'll tell you, so Dean and McCollum are their normal starters on the outside, but Smith, the rookie out of Georgia, playing in the slot, this will be his first start, but he's talented. Like I'm trying
You
to
better
remember
believe he's
if
going to face Amon-Ra St. Brown for a whole day.
he might have been. I know I had him really high up in my safety rankings. I wonder, he might have been my number one safety. I'd have to go look it back up, but I really liked the game that he had. But he is very much kind of like a Brian Branch, and I do think he's going to have a hard time holding down Amon-Ra. It's a that's a tough ask for a rookie in his first start in his second game. That's a big ask. But I'd like him as a player. He's a talented guy. I think he can play free. I think he's better in the slot where they're going to use him. But it's a whenever you're trying to start a safety, to trying to get a safety to cover Amon-Ra, that's should always be an advantage to Amon-Ra. So assuming the Lions elevate the X and you can get Amon-Ra back in the slot to run more traditional routes that he usually runs, I think you will see Smith matched up against Amon-Ra, and I do think that should be an advantage for the Lions. So, yeah, you want me to shift to safeties?
All right, so the safeties, Jordan Whitehead, Christian
Crazy.
Issien, backing him up, Kayvon Merriweather.
There you go. And I mentioned Thomas can play a little backup safety as well. Izian is small and undersized, and but he so but he kind of safety three for them, right? So he's going to have to be a guy who he's going to be have the guy who has to step in at free safety, and it's a he's a good player, but he's a definite downgrade from Winfield, who was an all pro last year. So I think that, again, if it's a opportunity for the Lions to have a couple new starters in different roles in the secondary, even if they're able to keep their starting outside corners intact, and they still are, they still have Whitehead, those other two spots are potential problem areas that I think the Lions can, scheme to their advantage. So opportunities. It's for bounce back games from St. Brown, opportunity for bounce back game from Laporta, and then opportunity for J-Mo to show that he's not just a one game kind of, explosion. He can be more consistent on a game to game basis.
All right, your last draft board update. This is back from April. You had Tyke Smith as your 13th rated safety.
Oh gosh, who am I thinking of then?
Javon Bullard, also from Georgia, you had as the number one safety.
That's what it is, Bullard. Gosh, why don't I get those guys mixed up?
There's hundreds of guys that are up to be drafted every year, and maybe you get them mixed up sometimes.
You know what it is? Like you shift your focus from from season to season, and it's like you completely lose so much memory. Bullard was, yeah, I knew it was a the Georgia safety. I just thought it was, I thought it was Smith, because I, so all right, maybe I have to recalibrate my thought process on Smith. But again, look, third round pick came out of Georgia. He's, you know, we'll see what he's got. Because he's, like you said, it's big hole, potentially really big hole to fill.
So good week for Goff and the top receivers, or quote unquote the targets between St. Brown and Laporta, to get back on track against the Buccaneers. Because Goff didn't play the greatest game. He came through and it mattered, but like throughout the entire way, he didn't play the greatest game either. All right.
So Greg Almond, who has covered the Buccaneers for a decade, but he's now, I think he was with the Athletic last year. He's now with the Fox Sports. He put up a statistic the other day that I thought was notable. He said, of the quarterbacks that have played the Buccaneers, at least three times, okay? So of the over their last like 15 whatever quarterbacks that have played the Bucs at least three times, four of them, the top four, he listed their production. So Dak Prescott was four. He produced two on average 280 yards against the Bucs defense. Matt Ryan, 300 yards. Patrick Mahomes, 327. Jared Goff's average, 383. That was
Wow.
his average. Yeah, significant. He had 353 against them in week six last year, and then 287 in the playoffs. That both of those are still above his season average of
Yeah.
260, 269 a game. So he exceeded his season average in both games against the Buccaneers. So you add a banged up secondary into the fact that Goff has produced against this scheme in the past. And it really is just going to come down to if the offensive line can hold up against pressure, then Goff can take the
Pick them
can has
apart.
shown success to pick apart the scheme. Yeah, he's smart with his diagnosis. He had an off game. I think he'll be he'll it's a team he's familiar with, and so a scheme he's familiar with, and so yeah, it's an opportunity for the Lions to bounce back offensively.
Right. Kicking special teams. For the Buccaneers, Chase McLaughlin's the kicker. He had
Very
a
good.
56-yard field goal last week. Yeah, good kicker. The punter is Jake Camarda, whose net putting average last week was only 38. He only had one punt, but
Right.
so he's a pretty decent punter. I don't have last year's numbers up,
He's
but
about average last year.
you can't judge him on one punt from last week. He did kick it off eight times, six of them for touchbacks.
Historically, not very good on kickoffs, but with the new kickoff rules, you throw all the history out the window, I guess, right?
Right, yeah, we don't know what's going to happen. Kick returns Austin Ekeler for the Commanders. He returned the two kicks that weren't touchbacks for 48 total yards. There you go.
Okay.
All right.
I tend to think with the there were a couple of teams that had a couple big runs, including one that was run back for a touchdown. I tend to think teams are going to look at those and say, every time they're catching the ball, they're getting out to the 40. Whereas if I just kick it out the back of the end zone, they get it at the 30. I do think teams are just going to start really heavily gravitating towards kicking it out the end zone because it's not like it. If you can spring it, you get a ton of yards. And so I don't know if it's worth the risk. You know, I think there's not the consequence of putting it at the 30 isn't that significant. So I'm starting to expect teams to
Everybody's just gonna boot
start,
touchbacks.
yeah, touchback city. I especially as the season goes on and they get more data, I expect the touchbacks to continue.
Kick returner last week, the only one who returned a kick was Sean Tucker. They also list Bucky Irving, Cameron
Yep.
Johnson, and Jalen McMillan. Punt returner is Trey Palmer.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's their kick return is kind of what we've seen. A lot of teams are using running backs in those roles, so because they're a little bit more durable. I think the Lions are one of the only teams that I've seen that are putting two wide receivers out there. Tom Kennedy was out there for six kicks. Just watched the ball sail over Khalif Raymond's head all six times. So, yeah, I feel like I'm seeing more and more running backs in this in these kick returning roles.
The long snappers, Evan Deckers, never even heard of the guy before. My first
Andre,
experience with Evan Deckers, although he may have been their long snapper
he
last
was
year.
a he was he
So
I believe
that's how much of effect he's had on the game,
yeah
on the two games we saw.
I don't yeah I know that
He
that's about
doesn't
as
make
much as I
mistakes. He
know as
didn't
well.
make mistakes in those two games against the
There you
Lions. So
go. There you go.
that's big.
I after we ended last week and I didn't have knowledge on the long snapper, I said to myself, make a point to learn about the upcoming long snapper, and I still didn't do it.
Well,
I get busy and then it's not a priority for me.
if people start turning off the show because we don't know anything about the long snapper,
Yeah.
like I don't, they're probably gonna be turning off a lot of shows. Like if they want more long snapping knowledge, I don't, because there's probably no bad ones. Like it would be interesting if there was one really bad long snapper, then we'd all know about him. Like
Right.
otherwise, they're all good. Like, and I'm sure
Yeah.
they bot and things get botched. You have bad snaps. Like they
Sure,
do
sure, sure.
happen, but I don't know. It really
Yeah,
only in a regular season game, as long as it doesn't happen on the last play, it's like not a big it's something that people don't remember. In a
Right.
playoff game, it's gigantic. And people will remember that forever. But at this point, Evan Deckers is probably pretty good. We'll put it at that.
Feel like there's enough decent ones out there too that if somebody was bad, they'd just get replaced.
Right.
So
Jimmy Landis is probably still in his backyard firing long snaps to his father or his brother, one of his cousins, just waiting for his chance. All right. That's it. All right. Who do you think's going to win? I don't know who got that one last week because we both had the same margin of victory and the score was kind of in the middle, wasn't it?
I was closer.
All right. That's what I was like. I knew there was going to be a point or two closer.
I had 24-20 and it was 26-20.
Okay. And
So
I think I had 27-23. Yep.
So I was only off by a total of 2 points. You were off by a total of four. So I got a good start there. I tell you, I'm really perplexed on this spread.
Ooh.
Like just because I don't know where it's I'm trying to justify it by saying it's a new coordinator, they have injuries. Like what could be, I don't know, what could be the justification for it? But they're all these all the betting outlets are expecting high scores too. I think they're the over under is like 51 and a half, and
Wow.
so and I think that's the highest of the week too. So they're expecting this game to kind of be a shootout. So I guess if you're expecting a shootout, you're kind of expecting a larger number. And so I'm kind of leaning that way. Geez, I am on the fence about how high I think it gets. And I do think 7.5 might be too much. See, it's like sometimes I think it's too much, and then sometimes I'm like, you know what? I absolutely think they can cover that. But I thought the Bucks just looked good last week. And because I thought they looked good and because they put up 37 points, I mean, I think Washington's bad, but how bad
They're
are
also
they? Are
bad. They might not be there, but that's all new there. So
right.
they
That's the
might, it's
thing.
not surprising that they'd start slow.
Right. So I'm going to anticipate the Lions are going to struggle with the wide receivers of the Bucks, and they're going to have to throw the ball around. And I don't know if the Bucks secondary is going to, or even the linebackers for them, are going to be able to handle the Lions. So I'm picking the Lions to win this one. I don't think that should be a surprise at all. I'm just debating on if on my final the final score for the Lions for me. I'm not sure exactly where I want to go. I'm going to leave the Buccaneers at 24, and I'm going to give the Lions. I'm going to give them 28. So I want to go 31, but I don't think I'm brave enough yet. So I do think it's possible for them to break 30, but I'm going to stick at 28. I'm going to play a little bit conservative here. And so I'm going to say they don't cover. That's my, but I still think they win. And I also think that the game won't be as close as the final score. Like I do, you know, I think it could be like a 28-21 where they still don't cover, but they win by a touchdown. Like I think they're going to hold control of this game, but I think it's going to be at the end is going to be the score is going to be a little bit closer than what the game looks like.
Lions' second biggest favorite on the board this week, unless Buffalo is a bigger favorite, but that's off the board since as we're recording, they're playing. Yeah, it's wild. I would think it'd be closer than this. I'd even give Tampa's got a shot to win this game. It's not like this is a cakewalk for the Lions. Like they are going to lose some games. It's going to happen. And this Tampa's a good team. Like I wouldn't be surprised if this is the one. I'm going to go Lions 29-22, barely with Tampa Bay beating the spread. So I'll go with that kind of like your 28-21 number, but I'll boost it so it's a little closer to the over under. And yeah, it's a good week for the Lions to get on track in the passing game, but the Buccaneers passing game is going to be firing back. And this game, yeah, could easily be one of like be 35-31. It could be end up being one
Oh
of
yeah.
those.
All right, so tell me your score one more time. You said
29-22. I said like eight
29.
different scores there.
Got it. 29, 20. So okay. So you're a bigger number. That's all right. I'm conservative right now. So look, you're basically you're just playing
Oh, yeah.
Bucks under, Lions over. All right. Going a little bit ahead over me. Again.
Well, our
I
margins now, we're going to be, it's now it's really close all the time. Before it was easy because they were bad. Well, it wasn't easy because they were bad, but like, I don't, it made it easier for me because I just picked them to lose every week, whereas you would pick them to win because of your optimism. And I think that's what helped me out for those first several years of the podcast. But yeah, now we're getting to the nitty-gritty now.
I really hope I don't. I really hope I didn't. I don't hurt myself here by getting too conservative. I'm sticking with it because that's what I said. But
Well, it is early, and then
no,
I don't know how many games went under. Like, if I should have this information, I'm sure there's plenty of bettors that listen to the show who have this on hand. But I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the games were under these first couple of weeks because everybody's kind of getting going, and then there'll be a period where it'll be all overs, and then it'll come back under late in the year because of the weather change and.
You may get me on the Lions. I think 28 is they could do better. So I hope you do get me. I hope it is over 29. And it'd be nice. Be nice to just to have them run a bunch of score up and not have it be close. But
Right.
I think this is a good team. It's a good playoff team. Former playoff team, and I think they have a shot to win their division. You know, I
Yeah,
think
this
I know.
this especially after 1 week, they don't look bad. Lions
Like I
could end up
don't
playing them again in the playoffs.
I know a lot of people picked the Saints to win the division, but I do think the Bucks and I think people were picking Atlanta too, but I think the
Right.
Bucks are going to
Nobody
be
was picking Carolina.
No. Carolina's in trouble
They
again.
are. I mean, that could just be a little. They're probably bad, maybe the worst team in the league, but like maybe that was a little bit of an aberration. They're not 47-10 bad, but maybe they are. It'll be an interesting year because remember, like, oh, I don't know. The 0-16 Lions were pretty bad like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you think you know right now how things are going to shake out, and it's never really stays that
Right. It's
way.
only been 1 week. We don't know
Right.
anything yet.
And I still think I'm kind of sticking with, okay, I know you're not supposed to carry over what you saw last season because it's new
Right.
teams, but
New teams.
I think there's still like some inherent bias that I have,
Yeah,
like,
no.
yeah. And so I'm trying not to get stuck to that too much. I'm trying not to get overwhelmed by the first week. We'll learn a heck of a lot more after, three, four games, but I'm not overly surprised too much by much out in the NFL so far. We'll see how it goes though.
Right. All right. We're starting to drag on here.
Yeah,
We got a
sorry.
couple of extra roof. No, it's not your fault. We're doing it. We're doing it as a team. Apple Podcasts, couple of boosts in reviews. No new written reviews. Spotify, a bunch of new reviews. So that's great. We appreciate that. Keep them coming.
Awesome.
That's it. That's all we got. I don't know. Do you have any parting shots here? I think we got everything out.
If I come up with something, I'll just tweet it out because I think we covered a lot, and I'm excited to see how this one goes. Glad it's back at 1 o'clock.
You're going to have to get to the game early on Sunday
Yeah,
because
that's okay.
Tigers start at 12.
Oh
So there's going to be two
gosh.
games going on. They're playing the Orioles, and there's a little bit of a playoff push going, although odds aren't great at this point, but they're still alive. And I don't see why that ballpark wouldn't be, well, actually, it'll be less full because everybody's going to be next door. But you
That's
probably
true.
could go to that Tigers Orioles game because it does start 50 minutes before the Lions game and get into Ford Field in the second quarter with the way baseball games, how fast they are now, especially if you get a good pitching performance out of whatever guy they throw out there, with their limited rotation. Because Scooble's not going to, I guess that's we should save that for another podcast.
I do think it's going to create a bit of a traffic situation. So if you are heading down to the game, there are going to be potentially a few more thousand people down there, right? Like, and so parking is going to be a little bit trickier. I know that they're shuffling media parking around already. And so I'm probably going to leave a little earlier than I normally do, but yeah, it's if you're headed down there, maybe go tailgate for a little bit.
Right. The Spartans won, Wolverines lost. We're
Yeah.
probably not. We've gone on long enough. We can't dig into it. Although, compared to last week, our emotions about our teams have probably totally switched for 180. Where it's like I'm feeling good now, and you're probably not
Well,
feeling so good
I
about
think
the future.
I wasn't feeling
You
so
weren't
good
really
last
feeling
week.
so great about the Wolverines.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's not a surprise that they lost.
Yeah,
It's
no,
kind of a
Texas.
surprise how they lost, what ended up happening. When
Well,
Michigan State was the reverse, it was very surprising they won, and then how they won.
yeah, I mean, for me, that kind of played out kind of like I expected it to. I think Texas is pretty lethal right now, and they look like one of the top two, three teams in the country.
Right, they might win it all.
No, I think Georgia is loaded, but
We'll see.
yeah, we'll see for sure. But I think, when you pointed out that you can lose a game or two and still make the playoffs because of the
Right.
new format and stuff, it should
Michigan
be
still
should
has the inside track, I bet.
yeah should make things fun. I expect some growth out of my Wolverines, but we'll see how it goes.
That's it. That's all we've got this week. So, everybody, enjoy that game against the Buccaneers. It's going to be a
All
lovely
right.
day in Detroit. And then until next time, let's go Lions.